Okay. And we're going to put everybody on a temporary mute with the option to unmute as we will. Okay. Okay, I think we are ready to start. Share screen pulls us to here, and we are good. Okay, I think I sent out this morning, I sent out a, is everybody on the call? Do you all get my emails, email weekly email reminders? Anybody not getting them? Okay. Because they this morning I sent out with it, I sent out the source page in case you wanted a copy of it. And we are up to in the middle of Parak Yud Zayin, which is the kind of the process that leads to the actual war between David and Avshalom. We went through the first half of the chapter over the last couple of weeks. Avshalom council with Achitophel and with Hushai, the two different battle plans for how to attack how to attack David, and Achitophel being the more strategic and probably militarily smarter move, Hushai being the delay tactic to try to stall so he can warm David. And in the end, we looked at we had a kind of a digression last week to look at the process by which it says that Avshalom and the Ish Yisrael, meaning the general population of Israel, were more inclined towards Hushai's idea, even though it was not as sound as Achitophel's, because God wanted them to accept that in part of God's plan to foil the plot of Avshalom. So Hashem tziva lafer et atzat Achitophel. Levavo hatova, levavo havi Hashem el Avshalom et hara'ah. So we spent some time looking at that, both from a practical perspective and a theological perspective. What does it mean? And so if you weren't here last week and you need to catch up, that's a kind of a standalone shiur that has been posted on the Shul website. And I think more or less, other than the fact that we've touched on this next piece a little bit, but we're up to Pasuk Tet Vav. Everybody with me? Okay. Vayomer Hushai el Tzadok ve'el Avyatar HaKohanim. So this first part of the story, we read a little bit of it, just to kind of put it in perspective. But in the meantime, Hushai goes out to Tzadok and Avyatar. If you remember there, the Kohanim that David had sent back to Yerushalayim to be his kind of ears and a communication line, together with their two sons, Yonatan and Achimatz. We'll come to them in a minute. And Hushai tells them, "Chazot v'chazot yatz Achitofel et Avshalom v'ziknei Yisrael v'chazot v'chazot yatz diani." Tells them, "This is what Achitofel and the ziknei Yisrael, the elders, counseled Avshalom." Which was a blitz, quick, go get David. Achitophel, take a small fighting force, go find David and take him out. And this is Chazot v'Chazot Ya'atziyani. This is what I have counseled, namely to slow it down, have a bigger army, take your time, and in the hope to give David a chance to escape. The at this point, he's reporting this as two different options that Avshalom has not yet decided on, even though in the previous text it says that Avshalom had decided in favor of Hushai's plan, but we had suggested that these two events are happening in parallel, right? Not sequentially. And that's unfortunate, but that's just the way Tanakh kind of describes events, finishes one subject and then moves on to the next, even though it brings us back in time. The report to Tzadok and Avyatar is clearly to tell David to run away, is clearly based on the fact that there's a kind of two options on the table, and we don't have a clear picture yet of which Avshalom is chosen. So that's what Hushai is warning Tzadok and Avyatar about, that Achitophel has offered this plan, which is more dangerous to David. Kazot v'kazot yatziyani, I have counseled this plan, but atah shilchu mehera, therefore, quickly send message to David and tell him not to stay the night in the Arvot HaMidbar, in the plains of the wilderness, meaning in the area of the Arava around the Yericho area, which is where David was heading. I'll show you a map in a moment. But he says to him, make sure that David understands he should not stay there, because that is what Avshalom is planning to do. Well, that is what Achitophel is counseling him to do, namely take your army and take your small fighting force and go catch up to David tonight while he's still staying there in that area. Begam avor ta'avor. And not only that, also Passover, meaning don't stay the night in Avot Midbar, and even more importantly, cross over the Yarden. Go literally cross over the Jordan River in order to protect yourself. You're much safer on the other side of the Yarden, and we'll have to look at that as to why going over to Machanaim is a safer bet for him. Lest you be swallowed up, and all the people by the king, or lest the king be swallowed up, and all the people who are with him. Meaning, unless the king kind of gets caught up in Achitophel's counsel, and we lose the opportunity to escape. So that's the counsel of Hushai, or the message Hushai needs to send to David. He needs to send it to him quickly, and in order for that message to get there, he's going to use the communication, the intelligence spy apparatus that David had put in place, namely Tzadok and Eviatar, to their two sons, Yonatan and Achimatz, who have a sort of more free access in and out of the palace, or in and out of Yerushalayim. And that is exactly what happens. Yonatan and Achimatz omdim be'en rogel. Yonatan and Achimatz, they were waiting in a place called Ein Rogel. Ve'acha shivcha ve'gida lehem. And she went, the servant, meaning Yonatan and Achimatz are waiting, but Eviatar and Tzadok, they themselves can't go and tell them what's going on, because that would be too obvious, right? For the Kohanim to go out in Rogel and tell Achimatz and Yonatan to kind of report they spoke to Hushai. Like, there's too many obvious players there for this to work if Hushai is really working as a spy. And therefore, everything has to be done in secret. So they send their maidservant, who they trust, Yonatan Achimatz omdim ba'alcha ha-shivcha of Tzadok and Eviatar, mi'igid alahem, and let them know, ve'hem yalachu ve'igidu le'melech David. And they will then go and tell David, ki lo yuchlu lehera'ot lavo ha'ira. Because they themselves, the Kohanim, Tzadok and Eviatar, they couldn't not be seen, or the Yonatan and Achimatz, they could not be seen coming in and out of the city, right? They're too high profile to be seen kind of communicating and talking in secret while everything is going on. Nonetheless, despite the great effort to hide their communication, Vayar Otam Na, but a lad saw them, Vayaged L'Avshalom. And so now they are not only on a mission to inform David of critical information, but they have been identified. What's the technical term for it in today's community? The doxed? Is that what they call it? When they take a picture and publish it on the, they've been doxed? Okay. So vayachush nehem mehera vayavo al beit ish bebachurim velo be'er b'chatziro v'yardu sham. So these two, Yonatan and Achimatz, they run and they come to a house in Bachurim, to a place where there is a well, and there they go down into the well to hide. Actually, before I get into this next piece of the story, just a quick question as to where Ein Rogel is. Again, it's just a text, so we don't have a map here in this text, too. Or maybe we do. I have a separate map, but. Do we have a map? No. Maybe we do. Maybe we do. Let's see. We have a map, but it's not going to help us find Ein Rogel. So for now, I'm going to close that and show you on this map. This is a very interesting map. It's published by Herzog, Tanakh.com. I think I've shared this with you in various contexts in the past. If I scroll out for a minute, it's a map of Tanakh and Tanakh places superimposed on top of a Google map and Google map engine. So it's a fascinating, it looks like a Google map, Google Earth, and you can identify Perek and Pasuk. You can put in whatever chapter of Tanakh you want, and you can, or period of the era or period of time, and it'll pull up those places. And then if you really want to have some fun, and you can scroll in and scroll out, if you really want to have some fun, you can go down here and you can superimpose a modern map on top of the biblical map or underneath the biblical map. And so now I have the same map. Here's Bachurim, here's Yerushalayim, here's Ein Rogel. So more or less I have the same biblical map of this chapter. And now if I pull up a real map, or a contemporary map, and I can see, okay, so here's the old city, here's the Kotel, here's the walls of the old city, here is Ir David, this little finger down here is Ir David. There's the Shiloh Springs, right? So this map you're all familiar with. This is a typical map of modern Israel, Yerushalayim today. And down here is this place called Ein Rogel, which more or less is in just south of Ir David today. You can kind of go down there. It's not far, not hard to get to. I think Emek Rephaim is in the is in that area. If you take a look at Sefer Yehoshua, Sefer Yehoshua identifies, actually I put it here, different places in Yerushalayim, and or in different places in Israel according to the different tribes, and it says that the southern border of Yerushalayim, Yerad HaGvul Kzeh Ahar Asher Pnei Ben Hinnom, the valley of Ben Hinnom is the southern valley of Yerushalayim. Remember, Yerushalayim sits in the valley between two, or sits on a hill between, surrounded on two valleys, Nachal Kishon and Gei Ben Hinnom, which is in a place called Emek Rephaim, which is in the valley of Emek Rephaim. Today, there's a big street there, of course, called Emek Rephaim, but in Tanakh terms, it was a valley. But Yarad Gei Ben Hinnom El Katefa Yivusi Negba V'Yarad Ein Rogel, and this Gei Ben Hinnom, the southern edge of the valley of Yerushalayim, Ir David, came down into this basin called Ein Rogel, and that's more or less where, that's where Achimatz and Yonatan are waiting for information. So the significance of it, let's go back to this map, right? The significance of it is that here's Yerushalayim, here's Ir David, here's where the Avshalom and all of the pieces of the story are happening, and they are now sitting south of Yerushalayim, just south of Yerushalayim. Remember, everything south belongs to the tribe of, everything south of Yerushalayim belongs to the tribe of
Benjamin.
South of Yerushalayim is Judah. North of Yerushalayim is Benjamin. Remember, Yerushalayim was the border city with a border hilltop between Benjamin in the north and Judah in the south. And so it makes, so you go out of Yerushalayim down the valley of Gei Ben Hinnom into Ein Rogel, you're heading south. Whereas where they end up going is to a place of called Bachurim. Bachurim over here on this map, you can see Bachurim is north, northeast. That's where David is. Or David moved on from there. I'll show you in a second where David went. But David, when he left Yerushalayim, rather than going south into Midbar Yehuda, which would have been logical, but also too logical, too obvious, David ironically heads northeast into the tribal territory of Binyamin. And there he thinks he's it sort of less friendly territory, perhaps, but at the same time, a better place to hide. And so David has gone from Yerushalayim out this way towards Bachurim. We'll show you David reached Bachurim. We know that for a reason. I'll show you in a minute. And there, Achimatz and Yonatan are going to go from Ein Rogel and follow David out to Bachurim. Okay, that's more or less the map Here's the original map. Here's Yerushalayim. Here's Ein Rogel. And we've got to scroll out a little bit, right? Here's Ein Rogel, and there's Bacharim. More or less today, it's already east. So Abu Tor is over here, Har HaZeitim, and kind of a little bit northeast of Har HaZeitim, if you want to put yourself into contemporary map. Okay, let's go back to the text. So there they are, and they need to run for their lives. And they now, not only are they going to inform David, but they're also being, they were also caught. They were seen. They were caught on camera. These Avdei Shalom went, and they informed on them to Avshalom. So Vayered, so what do they do? But they went. They come to the house of somebody in Bachurim. So that's that city that I showed you up in the northeast. Right? Why they go there is because they know that that's where David went. And this in particular individual, he had a well in his courtyard. And they went down into the well to hide. Hiding in a well isn't necessarily a safe place to hide if they're going to look for you. However, the woman went and she spread some kind of covering or carpet or cloth over the top of the well. And she spread over it some kind of groats or some dried corn in order to pretend that there was that it's been sitting there drying out so that nobody would have been disturbed, nobody would have disturbed it. Velona da davar, so that nothing was known. Vayavo avdei Avshalom el Aisha. Avshalom's servants came marching through to find where is the two spies, Achimatz and Yonatan. Vayavo avdei Avshalom el Aisha baita. Vayamru aye Achimatz Yonatan. Where are the spies? Where are Achimatz and Yonatan? Fatomelehem Aisha. So she says to them, Avru Michal HaMayim. They've gone over the water brook. They've gone past the water. Vayabakshu. They looked for them. Velo Matzav. They couldn't find them. Vayashuv Yerushalayim. So after their search was futile, they came back to Yerushalayim. So after they left, these two, Achimatz and Yonatan, came out of the well. So then they could do exactly what their mission was, to go and tell David that they were, what it was, the message that was given to them. Quickly, rise and pass over the water, meaning go over the Jordan River. Because this is what Achitophel has counseled against you. So it's fascinating that the message isn't nuanced. It's not, here's what Achitophel said, here's what Hushai said, Avshalom is deliberating, etc. None of that. Right? All they deliver is the most important part of the message, which is Achitophel is coming out to get you with an army. He knows you're here, leave. And the best place to go is to cross over the Jordan River. So David arose together with all of his people, and they passed over the Yarden by the morning. By the morning, there was not a single one of them missing, meaning nobody was left behind. They all crossed over the Yarden. Every one of them crossed over into the area of Ever HaYarden on the other side, in the area of Mavayabok or Machanayim. I'll show you that in a second. And that's where David is now going to regroup and organize himself for his confrontation with Avshalom. Skip Pasuk of Gimel for a minute. We'll come back to it. V'David ba Machanayim. So David came to an area called Machanayim. V'Avshalom avarta yarden hu v'chol ish Yisrael imo. And Avshalom also passed over the Yarden, although it probably took Avshalom much longer to do so, and he together with the army of Israel, and now they passed over and they encamped in an area of the Gilad, v'yichan Yisrael v'Avshalom, Eretz HaGilad. Avshalom is in the Gilad, David is in Machanayim. The table is set for the next chapter, which is the war between their two forces. I skipped a couple of pieces. We'll come back to it in a moment. But I want to show you the map for a minute. So let's zoom out from where we were. We were at Bachurim. And we're going to go out like this. Let's just take a look at the biblical map. Okay, here is, this is a topography map. And here you have the Jordan, River, which you can barely see on a map. It's a contemporary map. It kind of looks like a little tiny trickle of blue. You all see that? Like, you know, it's like the kind of river you can kind of just jump over if you're playing hopscotch. You know, just jump over the water. It's literally tiny. You can't even see how much water there is. It's this tiny little brook. Anybody been to the Jordan River of late? Right? That's more or less what it looks like compared to a body of water. This tiny little thing. However, in the time of Tanakh, and this is very important for us to remember, this Jordan River that is today, this tiny trickle, was much bigger. Significantly bigger. How do I know it was significantly bigger? Several reasons. Number one, on the other side of the Yarden, in this area here between the Yabok River, which is where David is right now, Nachal Yabok, Machanayim, where David is right now, and where Avshalom is meeting him, which is in the area of the Gilad up here in the north, in this area here is an enormous forest referred to in Tanakh as Ya'ar Ephraim. That forest, Ya'ar Ephraim, is so big, it's like a jungle. It literally has wild animals in roaming free in it, and those animals will take their toll on the campaign, on the war between David and Avshalom. Now, this is in order to be sustained by the waters of the Jordan River, you need a body of water that's much bigger than what you see on this map. And in Sefer Yehoshua, actually, I remember where that pasuk is. Yeshua, when it describes crossing the Jordan River at the time of Yeshua, it says that the Hayarden male al kol gidotav kol yemei katsir. The Jordan River was overflowing its banks all the time of the harvest. Again, it's hard to imagine if you haven't seen the Jordan River of late. There's no banks to overflow. It's literally a brook. Whereas in this context, if you look at the valley in which the Jordan River flows, for it to overflow its banks, you're talking about a much larger body of water. That's significant for us strategically because it explains why it takes David all night long for a couple of hundred families, David and his 600 men and the families of Ittai Gitti, to cross the Jordan in order to get to Machanayim. He's got to go from Bachurim, which is here, all the way up to across the sea. I'm not sure he gets all the way up to Machanayim, but he certainly crosses over the Yarden, and he does this in an all-night-long project. It takes an extraordinary effort. And by the morning, they've all crossed over. They're going to make their way up here to the brook of Machanayim, which is probably near more or less where they cross. This is Nachal Yabok, the Yabok River, which comes off of the Jordan River. Can you see the blue on the screen? Right, this is Nachal Yabok. It's listed here, but it's hard to see. So it's on a map that's a contemporary modern map, it's really hard to recognize in the context of Tanakh. This was a major effort. Now, if it took David all night long to cross over with a small group of soldiers, families, and the families that were with him, can you imagine what it took for Avshalom and the entire army of Israel to march across the Jordan River? Whether they built bridges or whether they went north in order to find lower ground that they could cross over and then come back south, unclear, but that's going to take much larger amount of time. And so that that element of time is critical for David and for his escape. So that kind of gives us a picture of why it was so important to tell David not just to go and hide, but not to stay in Arava in Avot Hamidbar, here in the desert of or the plains of Yerushalayim or of Yehuda or Binyamin, not to stay here in this area, but to cross over the Yarden and head north. Okay. That's more or less the story. And the only reason why David is able to get that message is because of the extraordinary effort of Yonatan and Achimatz to get that message to him. And I want to come back to that story for a minute. I want to come back to the story of the well in the house of this Ish and Isha in the city of Bachurim. So first of all, the story itself is very familiar. Why is the story so familiar to us? Why is this sound familiar? Two spies.
Like Rechav.
Like whom?
Rechav.
Rechav, right. Correct. Two spies going out to find out some critical intelligence information that they need, and to come to, they're caught, they're being chased, they go and they hide. Where do they hide? They hide in the house of somebody whose loyalty should be from the other side, because after all, Rachav was a Canaanite, and she certainly, her loyalty should have been to the Canaanim, and yet it was to the spies and to Yoshua. Similarly, you have this Ish and Isha, who's loyal, we don't know, because we don't know who they are. And that's one of the mysteries we're going to have to explore, right? Who are these people? But they're in Bachurim, and Bachurim is certainly in the tribe of Binyamin, and Binyamin has traditionally not been favorable to David's world. So that in itself is a question. So that's the first comparison. And the second comparison is the whole mechanism by which they are hidden. Right here is the Shah. She takes and puts them, that they go into a well. She covers the well. She covers it with the produce, some kind of groats or some kind of produce that's drying out there in the sun. And in order to protect them so that they will not be found out. And then when the guards come and ask about them, she misleads them. She says to them, they've gone on. They've gone past Michalamayim. They're not here anymore. Avug Michalamayim. Vayibakshu v'lamatzau. They went and they sought and they could not find them. So she literally saves their lives. And that's exactly what you have in the story of Rechav. And in fact, on the source page that I shared with you, I kind of gave you some key phrases that are parallel as well. Yonatan and Achimatz, they come, they go down into the Be'er, and she hides them there by covering it with some sort of a cover, batifasat hamasach. In the case of Rachav and the spies of Yeshua, she does exactly the same thing, except that it's in a kind of a opposite direction. Instead of going down into the well, she takes them up to the roof. Elatam agaga, vatitmanem bebishtei ha'etz, and she covered them with flax or with hay. And then when they are discovered, when the king's men come, in the case of Yonatan and Achimatz, she tells them, they've gone past the brook of water. And in the case of the spies of Yeshua, there are two. She tells them, oh, they've gone on, I don't know where they are, they've left the shah of the city, go quickly, chase after them, you might catch them. And in both cases, the phrase that's used, which is a critical phrase, vayivakshu v'lomatzav, they chased them, and they could not find them. And that phrase appears by both. The most interesting parallel is that the story of Achimatz and Yonatan conveyed to David a message. They were the spies that came to give David a message. What was the message? In a nutshell, what was the message? Go, don't stay, go hide. But what was the end result? What was the end result of the mission of Yonatan and Achimatz? To get David to do what? Right? What was the end result?
To go, to escape, kind of, or to go somewhere.
Keep going over the Yarden to get out of Midbar Yehuda.
Cross the Yarden. That was exactly, the message was, don't stay, cross the Yarden. Avru atamayim. Correct? That was part of the message. Ivru mehera atamayim. Go and cross the Yarden.
I don't think that the soldiers do it more quickly than all the families.
No, but they could quickly than Avshalom could with the entire army.
I would think that an army could do it faster than families.
Oh, no. Smaller you are, the more agile you are. Small group, 100 families, 500 families, 1,000 families, it's going to, under the cover of darkness, in the middle of the night, it's going to do it far faster than, Avshalom still doesn't even have to call the army. He's got to go north, south, east, west. He's got to blow the shofar. He's got to call them all to arms. They have to gather the troops. It takes months. Okay. It takes weeks, okay. Not months. That's not going to happen overnight. They're not racing across the Yarden. David is crossing the Yarden tonight, and Avshalom is going to take months before he catches up to him. This is not a one-night event. But in the meantime, but the point that I wanted to get to here is that the end result of the mission of the spies was to get David to cross the Yarden. That's the critical piece, because then the whole story is going to take place in Machanaim. Machanaim is a far more secure location. He's got the entire forest of Yair Ephraim to protect him. He has, it's a much wider open space. He's got lots of places where he can hide or we can protect his men. Much better for him strategically if he's going to go into an open war with Avshalom. In Yoshua's case, right, if we go back to the story of Yoshua, which, and the story of the spies, we have exactly the same story. Yeshua sends two spies secretly into the land of Canaan. They come to the house of Rechav. Rechav hides them. They're discovered. Rechav hides them. She hides them by taking them up into the rooftop. And then she misleads the guard. She tells them where to go. And they go running after them. They don't find them. Right? It's exactly the same story. What's fascinating about the story of Rechav is, where does it end? What was the purpose of the mission of the spies that ended up in the house of Rechav? Purpose of that mission was to come back with information about Canaan. And they come back after 3 days hiding in the desert, in the hills. They come back to Yeshua. What did they report to him? They report all that occurred. And they said, God has given the land into our hands. Next pasuk. The next pasuk, Yeshua and all of his people come to the Yarden. In other words, and this is what I wanted to come away with, is that the two stories are not only parallel, but they kind of almost stand in exactly the same structure to highlight the point of connection, but also the point of departure, the parallel that highlights the differences. And we've had this many times in Tanakh, where biblical parallels usually highlight the profound differences in the circumstances. They both end up with a message to the leader to cross the Jordan River. They're both discovered, they both fight in the same way, they're both saved in the same way, right? The house, the story of the Be'er and Bachurim, the story of the of Rachav in Canaan, they both end with crossing the Yarden. But profoundly in a different direction. Yeshua and the people of Israel are crossing the Jordan to go into the land of Israel. It's the beginning of the settlement of the land of Israel. It's the beginning of the redemption of Israel. David is crossing the Jordan to escape. He's going the other way. He's going east. Yeshua is going west. Yeshua split the Yarden. Yeshua brought down the walls of Jericho. This was the beginning of the story of the entrance into the land of Israel. For David, it's the exile from the land of Israel. For David, it's the last step, almost from the perspective of if you think about it in the whole story from Bathsheba to now, right, David has been losing one step at a time. He's lost the palace. He lost the kingdom. Avshalom is in Yerushalayim. Now he's gone into exile from Yerushalayim. And now he has to cross over the Jordan, which is where the whole story of entering into the land of Israel began, in crossing the Jordan. And he comes to Machanaim, which is also not insignificant, because Machanaim was where Yaakov had come back to. We have it in a couple of weeks in Vayetzer and Vayishlach. Right? Machanaim was the place where Yaakov, when he came back from the house of Laban and re-enters the land of Israel, he stops just there at Machanaim. There's another city just next to it called Pnuel, where he struggles with the Malach all night long. In other words, Machanaim and Pnuel and the Yabok River is where Yaakov comes back to the land of Israel, just like Yeshua crosses over the Arden. And here is David running away from the land of Israel, running into exile as a kind of the last straw of the punishment for the story of Bathsheba. And you kind of get a sense that he has to do it, but how reluctant he is to make that step to leave the land of Israel, because technically that's right, crossing the Arden represented going into the land, crossing the Arden the other way represented leaving and going away from land. So there's this moment with David's world kind of collapsing on him that he sees crossing the Arden, and there's a historical connection here. And the story of the spies and the story of the Be'er and the comparison to Rahab only intensifies the contrast between the world of Avshalom and the world of David and the world of Yehoshua, entering the land by crossing the Arden, leaving the land by crossing the Arden, the world, the loss of the kingdom, and now really even the loss of the land of Israel, David going into exile. All of this, really, can you imagine what is going through David's mind. At the same time, that's kind of the I would call the negative, or the moment of crisis in David's world. At the same time, there's another piece going on here, and that is a recognition of where they are. Okay, and we mentioned it. I said we're going to come back to it. What is the significance of the fact that all this is happening in a place called Bachurim? Who? What is Bachurim, and why is it of any significance? We don't know who the man is. He's not identified. El Beit Ish beBachurim. She's not identified. The woman who saves their lives and thereby saving David's life. Vatikach Ha'isha. So he's anonymous. She's anonymous. The only thing that's not anonymous in this story is where they are. They're in Bachurim. Why? Why do I care that they're in Bachurim? So for this, we need to do a little bit of review of why Bachurim was significant in the story of David himself. So we're going to work our way backwards. Let's jump one perek. Okay, so we're going to go back from Perek Yitzayin to Perek Tetzayin. David is leaving Yerushalayim, and on his way, he encounters Tziva, and we have the whole conversation about Mephibosheth. Skip that for a moment. We talked about that. We're going to skip it, and we're going to get to, right, he asks, where is Mephibosheth? And he says, stays in Yerushalayim. He lies about him. Not our issue. Pasuk, hey, Uva HaMelech David ad Bachurim. As he's leaving Yerushalayim, remember, he's not heading south. He gets to Bachurim. Bachurim is in Shevet Binyamin. I showed you on the map, right? Bachurim is north of Yerushalayim. If here's Yerushalayim, here's Ein Rogel. Bachurim is here north. If he's heading north, it means he's heading into the territory of Binyamin. Okay, he's heading here. He's headed this way in order to hide in these hills around this area. So he comes to Bachurim, and who does he meet there? V'nei misham ish yotzei mimishpachat Beit Shaul. Of course he's going to meet somebody from the house of Shaul, because he's in Shaul's home territory. And who is that individual? The name of Shimi ben Gera. Who is Shimi ben Gera? We had him back when, discussed and learned all about him last year. Shimon ben Gera was from the remnants, the household of Shaul, some relation to the house of Shaul, don't know exactly how. Yotze yotzo umkalel. And he came out cursing David. Vaisakel bavanim et David, throwing stones at David and at all of his people and at the Giborim. And saying to him, say, Isha damim, Isha blial, go, be gone, you wicked man of blood. God is paying you back for the blood of the house of Shaul. And we spend a great deal of time talking about what is his issue, what's his beef with David, why is he cursing David, why does David tolerate it? The Netzriah, they want to kill him. David says, no, let him be. Shimon ben Gera has his moment to shine. And in fact, David went on his way, v'yelech David v'neshab batarech, v'shimi olech b'tzela ha'alu mato olech v'yekalel. David and his men were walking through the valley, and Shimi along the hillside, crossing him, cursing him, throwing stones at him, throwing dust and mud at him. And he goes and he continues on his way. That's the last thing we heard about David before our attention shifted to Avshalom in the palace. All of that occurred in the city of Bachurim. So the notion doesn't escape our attention, the fact that when David now, when Yonatan and Achimaatz go and hide from the soldiers of Avshalom, they go and hide in the well of a couple who are yet to be identified. Where? In the city of Bachurim. In Bachurim, where Shimon ben Gera's hometown, that's where David's going to find, where Yonatan and Achimaatz are going to find a hiding place that's going to protect them so that they can go and spy and inform on Avshalom and tell David about what's really going on. It's fascinating. If they come back, where I lost the place for a second, they come to, of all places, they go to the house, in Bachurim. Not only that, it even goes one step further, because not only is Bachurim the place where David encountered Shimon ben Gera, but David had another encounter, or we are told about another encounter related to David in Bachurim, just to further highlight how connected Bachurim is to Shaul and the house of Shaul. Anybody remember the last time we encountered Bachurim? It was a long time ago. Very long time ago. If I go back to the very beginning of Sefer Shmuel Bet, there was, after the death of Shaul, which is in Perak Aleph, and the eulogy of Shaul, there is a, David goes and establishes himself in Hebron, and then there is a remnant of the house of Shaul by the name of Ishboshet, and Avner ben Ner, Sar Tzva Asher LeShaul, Avner ben Ner was the general of Shaul, he took Ishboshet, and he crowned him king. Right, where did he crown him king, by the way? Ve'yavireyu Machanaim. He took him over the Arden and he crowned him king to take over the house, the kingdom of Shaul, and to therefore challenge David to the throne, did so in a city called Machanaim. Why is that ironic? Because that's where David is hiding. Right? That's exactly where David is hiding right now, in the city of Machanaim, there on the Yarmouk River, about to start. Machanaim plays a very important role in all of this. But David is, Avner ben Ner starts the kingdom of Ishboshet ben Shaul in Machanaim. And from there it spreads to the Gilad and Ashur and Yisrael and Ephraim and Binyamin and Yisrael Kulo. And starts a whole civil war between Avner and between Yoav. Right? We talked at length about that civil war. When that civil war comes to an end, and it comes to an end in Perek Yimel because Avner and Ishboshet have a falling out, not our issue for now, Avner goes running to David to try to make peace with David. And David says to him, I will make peace with you on one condition. What was the condition? The condition was, Lo tiret panai ki im lifnei heviecha et Michal bat Shaul bevoacha lirot et panai. I want Michal back. So quick review. Who is Michal and why does David want her back?
He was David's wife,
right? She was Michal, daughter of Shaul, was David's wife. David, if you go back to the story in Shmuel Aleph, he loved Mirav. Mirav was already married. So he, or Shaul gave Mirav to somebody else. So he ended up marrying Michal. Michal Bachel loved him. Michal saved his life on more than one occasion. Because when Shaul wanted to kill David, who informed David and opened the window and let David climb out the window and saved his life? Michal? Michal was Lord. And then after David had to run, what did Shaul do for Michal? Why does David have to ask for Michal back? What did Shaul do with Michal? Left her sitting there waiting for David to return? I don't think so.
Shaul married her off to somebody else.
Correct. He married her off to somebody else. Who did he marry her off to? A man by the name of... Now I'm testing how much you remember. That's okay. He married her off to a man by the name of Palti ben Laish. And so here, David has the opportunity to reunite the kingdom. He wants Michal back. Why does he want Michal back? Partially for two reasons. Number one, because there was a very, right, and Michal loved her and loved him, and I assume that he loved her back. But more importantly, for his perspective, if he wants to reunite the kingdom together, his best chance of doing so is to go back to the union with Shaul's daughter. David didn't want to rebel against Shaul. David was married to Shaul's daughter. He was the son-in-law of the king. He had every right to the throne. So if he remarries Michal bat Shaul, they have re-establish the lineage of the house of Shaul. So Vayishlach David Malachim el Ishboshet ben Shaul lemor. The message goes back to Ishboshet saying, Tana et Ishti et Michal asher erasti li b'me'ar lot lishtim. I married Michal. I would like to Michal back as my wife. But in the meantime, Ishlach Ishboshet veikachem me'im ish me'im paltiyo ben laish. So Ishboshet goes and takes Michal from her new husband, namely Palti ben Laish, to return her to David. And here we have a very tragic picture of Michal leaving her new husband to go back to David, and her husband following along, vayelech itah isha. Her husband went with her, haloch uvacho, crying as he went, following them, achareha, ad Bachurim, until the edge of his land, which was the city of Bachurim. And then Avner turns to him and says, v'yomar elav Avner, lech shuv v'yashal. Go home. At this point, there's nothing more you can do. And he returns, and then Michal comes to David. Michal stays with David, and more or less is his primary wife until, next part of the story, until, somebody unmute themselves and tell us, until
she criticizes him.
Right, until the story of bringing the Aron to Yerushalayim, and there is a falling out between Michal and David, and they have a big fight, and then the text ends at saying that they never had any more children, or any children at all, and more or less that marriage is over, and from there, the story begins to unfold in the direction of David looking for a new wife, he can no longer build the temple because he doesn't have a family, he doesn't have an heir to the throne, he doesn't have a wife. And that everything that happens now happens in the aftermath of his conflict with Michal. Not being able to build the temple because he doesn't have a family, he doesn't have an heir to the throne, search for a new wife to find an heir for the throne, choice of Bathsheba, wrong choice, nevertheless he stays with it, and from there everything happens afterwards. And it all starts from the story of Palti ben Laish, who went crying ad the Bachurim. So here's David, or here's Achimatz and Yonatan, David's spies, hiding in a well in Bachurim, the same city which is the hometown of Palti ben Laish, wife, husband, first husband or second husband, or interim husband of Michal, and the same hometown of Shimon ben Gera. Now, if there was ever a city that should be antagonistic, unfriendly to David, Shimon ben Gera style, it would be Bachurim. And yet, that's where these two individuals, who are nameless in the story, go out of their way, literally sacrifice to put their lives on the line, endanger themselves to protect these two spies, Yonatan and Achimatz, who are heading to David to tell David how to save his life. Fascinating. Okay, that's the irony of places in Tanakh, that places tell stories. And here's a whole story, just because we know where they are. And if you put all the pieces together, it's fascinating. Of all places to hide, that's where they go. All right. I'm going to park that for a minute and now come back to a different question. We'll come back to it. But I want to come back to a different question. And that is, who is the Ish and who is the Isha that saved the lives of these two spies? Now, here's the problem. They are anonymous. And anonymous personalities, there's no way to identify who and what they are because they're anonymous, never told. And when there's anonymity in Tanakh, two things happen. Number one, we can learn a great deal from the fact that they're not named. And number two, the Midrash, Chazal, will not sit comfortably with them not being named. Chazal have a methodology, and part of that methodology is that the Medrash abhors a vacuum. The fact that they play such an important role in the story and yet have no name, Chazal say, no, that's not possible. This woman saved the lives of Yonatan and Achimatz, and she goes unnamed. Of all the roles that she plays, Yonatan and Achimatz saved David's life. Without them, we'd have no Malchus Bes David. And yet she has no identity. So as in many cases of anonymous personalities or people in Tanakh, Chazal will find a way to link pieces of the story and tell us who she is. But before I get to the Medrash and the Medrashic approach to identifying her, let's first deal with the possibility that she is anonymous intentionally. Why would she be anonymous intentionally? What do I gain by leaving her anonymous intentionally?
She's not at risk from retribution from Avshalom's family.
I don't think she was anonymous to them. She's anonymous to us. Right? She's not anonymous to them. They know exactly who she is. Her name is on the front door of the house. We just don't have a picture of the front door. Right, they come to her. The Avdei Avshalom come knocking on her door. They know exactly who she is. So I don't think that it's her life that the anonymity in Tanakh is not going to help spare her life. But it does, might do something else.
Maybe that way she won't be like famous, and maybe she was trying to be modest.
Oh, that could be a reflection of her modesty. I would take that idea one step further. Why is it? What's the significance of the fact that the name of the city is not anonymous, but the name of the woman is? Right? Or the man, or the name of the husband, for that matter. I have a Mr. and a Mrs. who live in Bachurim. At Mr. and Mrs. who? So let's assume for the moment that they're anonymous intentionally. Why is it significant that this anonymous couple who saved the lives of Natan and Achimatz, but they happen to live in Bachurim? That we're told, but we're not told who they are. You see where I'm going? What do we know about Bachurim? What have we just unpacked in terms of where and what Bachurim is? It's the city in Sheva Binyamin, a city where David met Shimon ben Gera, a city where Mirpalti ben Laish probably lives, right? It's a city essentially that has a history of being part of the story of that is antagonistic to David, part of the loyalty of the house of Shaul. And if you think back to the whole David's troubles and trials all start from the conflict with Shaul. Bachurim is at the heart of the story of the house of Shaul and their antagonism towards David. Here is David running for, or not David, right? Here is Yonatan and Achimatz representing David, or spies of David, running for their lives. And who saves them? The anonymous, unknown Mr. and Mrs. who live where? Who live in Bachurim. Why is that significant? So think about it from David's perspective. What's the message? What's David seeing, hearing, feeling in that moment? Assuming he knows about it or he will find out about it. What does it tell David?
That he saw some support.
Right, that he's not alone. that he's not alone, that Hashim ben Gera, the Halti ben Laish, even in the hotbed of Bachurim, and even in the center of Shaul's world, the rank and file person who lives on the side of the street with the Be'er, they're going to come and risk their lives to save the two spies of David. David has more support than he knows. And that's critical for him, because when he, actually, I didn't read the end of the parak, but when he actually comes to Machanaim, and Avshalom gathers in his whole war, his whole army at the end, right? So Avshalom is in Gilad and David is in Machanaim. When it says that he comes to Machanaim, he's met by a number of individuals, Shovit ben Nachash, and we'll talk about who he is, Machir ben Amiel Milodavar, we'll talk about who he is, Barzillai Giladim Minoglim, we'll talk about him, right? We'll get to all these people next week, but all of these people come today for what purpose? They bring Mishkav, V'sapot, U'chliotzeh, V'chitim, U'sorim, V'kemach, V'kali, U'fo, V'adashim, V'kali. They bring David and his army. They bring them beds and basins and earthen vessels and wheat and barley and meal and corn and beans and lentil and parched poles. Why? And honey. Dvash. Honey. And dvash is not honey. Dvash in Tanakh is fruit. But it brings them fruit, V'chem'ah, and butter, Vitzon, and cattle, Shvat Bakar, and cheese. They brought all of this to David. For what purpose? Well, Am Asherito, Lechol, for food. Ki Amru Ha'am Ra'ev, Ra'ev, Etzameh Bamidbar, because they said the people are hungry. David has support. David has people who come running to help him. David has a whole army of people he doesn't even know about, will come and bring him food and bring him clothes and bring supplies for his army. He has no idea the level of support that he has on across the countryside. And that starts here in Bachurim. Dafka in Bachurim, which a chapter ago introduced us to Shimon ben Gera. But there's an Ish and Isha sitting there in Bachurim we don't even know about. And they are going to save these lives of Achimatz and Yonatan. They're going to risk their lives to save them because they are loyal to David. So the story and the anonymity of this particular couple and jumps off and says to us, the city is not anonymous. We know exactly what Bachurim is. It's a loyal town to Shaul, maybe. Not so loyal, right? There's still enough support for David and in David's flight from Avshalom. So that's one piece of the puzzle. Now,
but Avshalom is not specifically on Shaul's side.
No, but when David is running, when David is leaving Yerushalayim, who's the first person he encounters? Right, he encounters those who are supportive of him. He encounters those who are antagonistic to him. But those who are antagonistic are antagonistic for old complaints, right? That's exactly what he encounters. He encounters Shimi ben Gera in Bachurim. When David is fleeing Yerushalayim in the beginning of the rebellion of Avshalom. So David is fleeing Yerushalayim. Who does he see in Bachurim? Shimi ben Gera from Beit Shaul. He says to him, you're being punished for all that you did to the house of Shaul. So the conflict with Shaul, it still haunts David. Right, so he's walking through territory that's antagonistic because they're loyal to Beit Shaul. That conflict is not going away. So that's part of the tension.
Does David know he has fans in Bilharim?
So that's what I think is this unfolding story in this parak, is that it becomes clear to him because, first of all, Yonatan and Achimatz, I'm sure, tell him the story, right? This is not a secret, right? That Yonatan and Achimatz meet David. And second of all, by the end of the parak, he's got all of these other people, and we're going to look at them. We're going to see them. And their stories are also connected to the house of Shaul. And each one of them has a different story, and they also come to David. So suddenly David is being surrounded by people who have a connection to him. Where it shouldn't have a connection to him, and yet they do. And we'll see why. But I think that that's part of the significance of the anonymity of these people, is that they represent anonymity. They represent the rank and file, not particularly important. It doesn't matter who they are. There could be anybody. They could be anybody. But they're even in the house of Bachurim, in the city of Bachurim, and their loyalty is to David because he is Melech Yisrael. That's what I would call, I think that that's probably the pshat of it. I will share with you two additional pieces of information that, again, from a midrashic perspective, Medrash abhors anonymity. So every time there is the na'ar, then the story of the Akedah, that's mentioned just as a na'ar, Chazal say, oh, it must be somebody we know, right? So they connect it to Yishmael. There's all kinds of places in Tanakh where you have an individual who plays a role, who's not named, midrashically, Chazal will always try to identify them. So here too is no exception. This woman ends up being identified in the midrash. Again, whether it's pshat, I couldn't tell you. I think pshat-wise, I'm more comfortable with the notion of them being anonymous. The connection to a particular name is significant, but it runs through Bachurim. Again, who do we know from Bachurim? Who is the most famous person who comes from Bachurim? Either Palti ben Laish or Shimon ben Gera, right? Those are the only two possibilities. Says the Medrash, and this is in Medrash Shmuel in an odd place. It's actually related to Megillat Esther. Amr of Shmuel Banachman Amr of Yonatan. Mipnei ma zachu Mordechai ve'Esther liasot nes ze al yadam. Why did Mordechai and Esther merit a miracle? How did we get to Purim? I have no idea. How did we get to Purim?
Well, they're from the tribe of Binyamin.
Okay, Mordechai is from the tribe of Binyamin. Okay? Mordechai is more than just in the tribe of Binyamin, actually. We want to go back to Esther for a minute. Show you something interesting about Mordechai. Where is Esther?
From Shaul, too, right? He's from
Shaul. It gets even more interesting than that. Mordechai. Let's reintroduce ourselves to Mordechai. Ish Yudi Aya B'Shishana Bira. Okay, he's a Yehudi because he comes from Machut Yehuda, but he's from the tribe of Binyamin. Ish Yemini is from the tribe of Binyamin. Ushmo, his name, Mordechai, Ben Yair, Ben Shimi, Ben Kish, Ish Yemini. So Kish, we know, is the father of Shaul. Mordechai Ben Yair, okay, I get that. How did Shimi end up in this lineage? We're talking about hundreds of years later. What's he doing in the story? Which Shimi are we talking about altogether? So Chazal, like I said,
is that the Shimi Ben Gera?
Oh, so Chazal don't like anonymity. And so they will identify this Shimi as, let's see if I see it quickly in the lineage here. There's a Medrash Zugman in Masechet Megillah. Not going to find it so quickly. When I need it, I can't find it so easily. But Chazal points along this lineage and say these are individual points, significant points of history. And if Kish is the father of Shaul, then I'm not seeing it. Okay, doesn't matter. Comes along the Medrash and says, who is Shimi? None other than Shimi ben Gera. So I have a lineage that goes from Shaul, Kish, right? Not from Shaul, from Kish. Shaul ben Kish. From Kish to Shimi ben Gera to Mordechai ben Yair. Why was Mordechai Zoche to the miracle? Says the Medrash, Mipnei Ishto shel Shimi. Em avihem shetzila shnei tzadikim min harega ve'elohen achimatz v'yonatan. Says the Medrash, Mrs. Shimi ben Gera is the woman who saved the lives of Yonatan and Achimatz. And it's a fascinating link, right? So you have this anonymous personality, the Isha in particular, right? The Ish doesn't play a role here. It's just the house of the Ish. The only one who plays a role here is the Isha. And so Chazal said, oh, that Isha, that's Mrs. Shimi ben Gera. How do I know? How do I know? I have no idea. But Shimi ben Gera, Shimi in the lineage of Mordechai must be related to this story. And this chus comes from Mrs. Shimi ben Gera. What did Mrs. Shimi ben Gera enter into this picture? How is this Shimi? So the answer is we only know of only two people who come from Bachurim in Tanakh. And one of them is Shimon Megeva we just had. And suddenly there's the Isha, Ha'isha, the woman. She must be Mrs. Shimon Megeva. The truth is that this medrash is connected to another medrash. Do you remember the story of the rebellion of Korach? And in the rebellion of Korach, there is a series of individuals mentioned at the beginning of the text, Parshat Korach, and one, right, Korach, Ben Yitzhak, Ben Kahat, Ben Shimi, etc. And with him, he took On Ben Pelet, Datan Ve'Aviram, Ve'On Ben Pelet, Bnei Reuven. Datan and Aviram play a role in the rebellion of Korach. Korach plays a role in the rebellion of Korach. What happened to On Ben Pelet? Doesn't say. Disappears from the story. So there's a famous medrash that says, Rashi quotes it, that On Ben Pelet was saved from the machloket by the merit of Mrs. On Ben Pelet, Ishto Hitzilo. His wife saved him. Because his wife said to him, what a business do you have in this machloket? Get out of the machloket. What do you need machloket for? What do you know this head on your head? Just get out of it. So she, in her righteousness, she saved him. She pulled him out. So the Medrash picks up on that same kind of theme and says, oh, the house of Bachurim must be the house of Shimon ben Gera. And therefore, who saved Yonatan and Achimatz? Mrs. Shimon ben Gera. And for that zchus, Shimi gets mentioned in the story of Purim. Okay, fascinating. How you get to Purim, a whole different issue. But that in itself is just a fascinating link. Possibility number one. Possibility number two, and again, these are assuming that we're going to identify who she is. I could always go back to my first position, which was the anonymity in itself is significant, but there's a second possibility. This one is much more kind of a hint or a conjecture, no way of really proving it, but Rav Meidan offers this in his presentation on Sefer Shmuel, so I'll share it with you. It's fascinating. Let's go back to this statement here. They have passed through the brook of water. When this woman, Mrs. Estate of Bachurim, saves their lives, she does so by telling the spies, telling the people, the soldiers of Avshalom, that these two individuals have passed the brook of water, Michalamayim. This phrase, Michalamayim, is an odd phrase. Because how do we learn the meaning of words in Tanakh? If you have a word you've never encountered and you don't know what it means, what would you typically do? Well, we would look it up in a dictionary.
Look at a previous situation.
Exactly. Like look at a previous reference to the same word or a subsequent reference to the same word. Okay. Here's the problem. What happens if a word only appears once in all of Tanakh? Now I have a problem. We learn language by context. If we don't have more than one frame of reference, we're just guessing. And so if you look at the Mefarshim on this Pasuk, one after the other, and I put some of them here on the page, one after the other, Rashi, Michalamayim, Ein Yodeh Lo Pitaron. I have no idea what it means. Because it has no other point of reference. There's no other place in Tanakh where it's mentioned. Says the Radak, Ein lechaver. There's no other reference. And I actually did a quick search before the I put this together on the phrase Michalamayim, and the word Michal doesn't appear anywhere else in Tanakh in this context. You single use only. And so he says it must be Pelagmayim, some kind of brook, some kind of division, says Rav Yosef Karo, Shem Nahar, name of a river. They're all guessing. Because we have no way of knowing. It's a word that is unique and used once in all of Tanakh, and it's only used here. So, okay. So it means something related to water. Maybe it's the well, maybe it's a brook, maybe it's a split in the water. We have no way of knowing, and it doesn't matter. Except for the fact that why would you use a word that appears once in all of Tanakh? There's so many good words in Tanakh for a nachal, for a stream, for a be'er. So many good words we have. Why use a word that only appears once in all of Tanakh? Unless there's an association that the text wants us to make. And say, wait a second. Yes, it has something to do with water, the fact that it's such a unique and out of place word means
it looks like the name Michal.
It's spelled exactly like the name Michal. It is the word Michal, right? And that's the irony of it. The only other frame of reference to Michal is not Michal Amayim, but Michal Bat Shaul, whose husband, Palti Ben Laish, happens to come from. Say it again. Husband, Palti, first husband, second husband, right? Palti Ben Laish happens to come from the city of
Bachurim.
Bachurim. So is it possible that this Isha is in fact Michal, and who after her conflict with Shaul, with David, went back to Palti Ben Laish or went back to Bachurim? And that this is in fact a hint to us that maybe Michal's role is somehow hidden in the story? Maybe. Who knows? But those are the three possibilities. Either Bachurim is telling me that the name, right, there are two other stories in Tanakh related to the city. One is Shirin ben Gera, and the other is Palti ben Laish. So if I want to identify this woman, I have to somehow connect her to one of those two. So either she's Mrs. Palti ben Laish and telling us that despite her husband's animosity towards David, antagonism towards David, she righteously saved the lives of Yonatan and Nachimatz. Or it means that Michal Bat Shaul, who has gone back to Bachurim, to Palti ben Laish, is somehow still loyal to David, still holds him an emotional attachment to David, and will in this moment risk her life to save the lives of his two spies, Yonatan and Achimatz. Or it means, third option, that she's totally anonymous, and that all we know is the name of the city, but it's a city that has such history connected to the loyal family, the loyal people of Beit Shaul, that for somebody completely anonymous with no stature and significance to go out of their way to save the lives of Yonatan and Achimatz in order to enable them to go to David tells me that ultimately the Amcha, the rank and file, the people of the country, the land of Israel, their loyalty is to David, their loyalty is not to the house of Shaul or to Avshalom, and that will become clear as the end of the chapter unfolds. So those are the three possibilities. They all revolve around the identification of this city called Bachurim. And now we are up to the point in the continuation of the story, but we've run out of time. So the rest of the story we'll have to explore next week. So that's all I have for you for tonight.
Thank you. When are you going to Israel?
Let me just stop the recording because we don't need the